Make us a favorite button on your browser.
It's sending a transmission of some kind.
TalkZone.com, your first choice for talk on the internet. Now more of the Wild About Pets radio show on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Susan Frank.
Welcome back to the show and our discussion with my guest, Paul Owens, who's the author of The Dog Whisperer, a compassionate, nonviolent approach to dog training, written with Norma Eckroat. If you'd like to see photos of the book that we're talking about today, click the purple Look While You Listen button that you see on the Talk Zone page. There's photos of the dogs and some of the different training techniques that we're going to be discussing. The phone lines are open. We are streaming live. It's December 11th. So if you'd like to call and ask Paul Owens a question, call 1-888-463-6748. I'll repeat that. It's 888-463-6748. You can also email me your questions to susan@wildaboutpets.net. Paul, we do have someone who emailed in a question. So this is from Los Angeles. The question is, how do you address food or toy guarding in a five-month-old puppy using humane methods?
This is a really good shining example about the differences in the training methods that you can use. When I started training again back in the 70s, what I would do is pin that dog to the ground or jerk them or yell no and physically force the dog to give me that which they had in their mouth. A separate, more positive way to do that, a substitute way, would be to teach the dog find it or drop it, which means in the beginning, you would hold something of greater value to the dog in front of them and say, find it or drop it. And when they take their mouth off of the object that they have, you then give them the treat and then give them the object back. So within a very short time, the dog learns it's more advantageous to drop what they have than it is to guard it. In our intermediate and advanced classes, what we do is line the dogs up, and I put a big bunch of chicken 2 feet in front of all the dogs. You can see on the on your website the cover of my books and DVDs where all the dogs are lined up. Those are real shots. And all those dogs are lined up, for instance, on the Good Habits for Great Dogs book.
Mm-hmm.
All these dogs lined up. You put treats in front of all those dogs, and then you say, leave it. And then you point to one dog, and one dog takes the other treats from all the other dogs. And they stay there. And why do they stay there? It's because in the beginning, you taught that dog, all those dogs that were staying there, that they get 20 treats if they allow the other dog to take the treats. Eventually, you just wean your dog off the treats. So it's all about substitution. Teach your dog what you want them to do rather than trying to get them to stop doing something. And in this particular case, you teach them to drop it, you teach them to leave it, you teach them to go get a toy, you teach them to do something else with their mouth.
And so this, in a way, cuts right through some of that aggression issue that the dogs might have, which obviously is spoken about a lot when there is guarding going on. You know, people talk about the underlying, oh, you've got an aggressive dog and you've got a big issue here. So you're saying this can kind of cut through that?
Safety is number one. Obviously, if you're trying to compete with a dog using negative methods that you're bigger, stronger, tougher, how does the dog know the difference between you and a child who isn't that fast, who isn't that strong? If this training is not about competing with your dog. You own everything your dog wants. You own your affection. You own your praise. You own everything that the dog wants. And so what you're trying to do is stop the competition and teach the dog a substitute behavior so they want to do it rather than physically forcing them to stop doing it.
Okay. On photograph number 9, we have a picture of a woman sitting at a desk and a little dog. It's a Chinese crested. Looks like a little on a blanket. And if anyone wants to see these photographs, just click the purple Look While You Listen button on the TalkZone.com page, and it'll take you right to these photographs. And you mentioned something that I found intriguing, something called the magnet game, which you mentioned actually can be used as almost 50% of the training. So tell us what the magnet game is and how does it work?
It'll be interesting to see if any of your slightly older audience recognizes that woman from the rock groups from the 80s. But anyway.
Wait. You can't just drop.
I'll give you. That's the only hint I'll give you.
No, you can't just drop that out.
All right. The magnet game is, again, let's take the analogy of somebody coming into your office and giving you $100 bills whenever you mention the name of Paul. That behavior, you saying Paul, attracted treats, attracted that $100. So let's say throughout the day, the same principle would hold. If your dog puts their behind on the floor without you asking, all of a sudden you praise them and pet them and throw them a treat, they're going to figure out very quickly that keeping their behind on the floor is worth more money. They have attracted your attention by putting their behind on the floor. There are five behaviors that people in the audience can start practicing immediately. In my new book, Good Habits for Great Dogs, I tell people to take a vacation for canine education. And what that means is for 1 week, don't ask your dog to sit, to lie down, to stay, to do anything. Just watch your dog throughout the day, and whenever your dog happens to sit, throw them money. Whenever your dog happens to lie down, throw them money. Whenever your dog happens to look up at you, throw them money. And money, canine currency, is petting, praise, treats. And the last two is whenever your dog happens to go to their bed or their blanket or their kennel without being asked, and whenever they bring you a toy. Those five behaviors, sit, down, look, go into their bed, and bringing you a toy, are powerful substitute behaviors for all the problems people have with their dog. So your dog can't run out the door if they're sitting. They can't jump on somebody if they're lying down. So the quickest way to do that is to play the magnet game. That behavior attracts treats like a magnet attracts metal.
You know, and that's a philosophy that's in the schools. Educationally, we're trying to think about, well, how can teachers reward children for what they are doing when they're doing good things instead of just the usual, you know, holler at them when they're doing things that they don't, you know, want them to do.
The most powerful reinforcement a parent can use is when the child does something without being asked, like saying thank you or letting someone go through the door, you know, basic polite things, then the child does that without being asked, and the parent goes up to him and said, I saw what you just did, and that was really good. That's what the child remembers, is that unasked for reinforcement, that unasked for praise, that the child will then say, well, if I get this kind of attention, they didn't ask me to do this, I just did it. That's what shapes character.
Paul, here's another question, also from Los Angeles. How do you address traditional trainers' arguments that the humane methods use too many treats or food rewards?
That goes back to the question you asked earlier about what positive training is. It means different things to different people. The term dog whispering means different things to different people. And so in this particular aspect, because I come from negative training and I was very successful, I had a dog in 1975 who was nationally recognized for how obedient she was, and she never got treats at all. And so I'm very familiar with the methods, and I was very good at it. I did it so many years. But I can honestly say that once you learn the science behind behavior, then that statement isn't made. And so if you talk to somebody who is really competent and really knows the science and the psychology behind this and know how to wean a dog off of treats so that you don't have to give them treats anymore, I think that would answer that question. You either wean the dog, this might answer it a little bit better, you either wean the dog off the negatives, in other words, you jerk them less and less and less and less when they heal more and more, or you wean the dog off the treats when you get the behavior. So they both work, but one is positive and one is negative.
Okay, well, thank you for that. You mentioned dog whisperer, and I know on your website and in your books, you know, it's referred to that you're the original dog whisperer using that term. What does that term mean to you, and can you speak a little towards the idea that you're the original dog whisperer?
Well, it means I'm old. Noah and I had this pact, you know, and I worked with all his animals and everything. Now, I've been around for so long, I think that's one reason. The other reason is that the original book that I co-authored with Norma Eckroat actually appeared in 1999 and was a bestseller, which I'm very blessed to be able to say. And
yes,
then my DVD called The Dog Whisperer came out in early 2004. So I think when they say originals, in order to differentiate me from other people who use the term, it's just because of the fact that I've been doing this for so long, and it seems like the first book garnered the most attention with it, and so I think that's where it all came about.
Okay, great. We are also looking at photographs from the book, The Dog Whisperer, our second edition. So if anyone wants to see those, click the purple Look While You Listen button that's on TalkZone.com. Our phone lines are open. It's December 11th. So if you'd like to call in and ask Paul Owens a question, call 1-888-463-6748. That's 1-888-GO-FOR-IT. Paul, we're looking at you. Now, this is with one of your golden retrievers, right? This is picture number 7. It looks like you just did the command down.
Yeah, that's Grady. Matter of fact, he's sitting here at my feet right now.
Oh.
Might hear him bark in a second just to keep his show authentic.
Well, that'd be fun.
Yeah. He was a rescue. He was an extremely aggressive dog when I got him. He used to live in somebody's backyard, and he used to fence fight, which means he used to fight with the dog that lived on the other side of the fence and used to protect his territory and everything. And it took me a year. And now you see what the possibility is. When you see all the dogs on the cover of the book, there's Grady in the middle. Matter of fact, the pit bull that's sitting next to me is actually a Staffordshire Terrier, but those two dogs on the cover of my original book, they used to be mortal enemies. They used to really want to rip each other apart. But that's a real picture. And I can honestly say those dogs were never hit, kicked, shocked, shaked, jerked. They never heard the word no. They were never pinned to the ground. And that's what's possible using positive training with very severely aggressive dog-to-dog aggressive dogs or dog-to-human aggressive dogs.
Okay, we have a question coming in from a caller. Dee, welcome to the show. Go ahead with your question for Paul Owens.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hi, Dee.
I have a question about leash reactivity. I mean, often when you walk down the street, you see dogs that pull or lunge or even bark and strain while they're on the leash when they see other dogs. And often you see the owner jerking on the collar to try to get the dog to stop. So what would be your suggestion for dogs that have this behavior?
Well, it's a terrific question, and let me address it two ways. And I think people will understand this. Imagine that if you saw a certain human being coming towards you, and the person next to you, your father, your mother, your brother, your sister, started hitting you in the arm. You would say, you know, I hate whenever that person shows up on the sidewalk. Every time that person shows up, my family member starts whacking me. And so you would have a real distaste for that person. And so instead of teaching the dog the negative association of jerking them to stop them from lunging or stop them from barking, you want to teach a substitute behavior. And so what would happen then, whenever that person appeared, you started giving your dog treats. Within 21 to 28 days, your dog would say, I love that guy. Every time he shows up, he starts giving me treats. And your dog would be more likely to stay by your side. The reason this happens, and this is for the psychology buffs in the audience, is that dogs have what's called an oppositional reflex. When they feel something pull them back, Mother Nature tells them to pull against it. Mm. So if you're holding a dog back, the message the dog is getting is, that must be a threat, because otherwise I wouldn't be held back. And the other thing is that most of the time when you're pulling a dog back, you're behind them, so your dog is taking the lead in the situation. So rather than correct the dog for the behavior, teach the dog something else. I want you to sit. I want you to lie down. I want you to look at me whenever that dog appears.
Does that help, Dee?
Yes, thank you.
Sure, and thank you for your call. Paul, you also have some great examples of what to do when you're walking dogs and photographs to go along with that, and I liked that very much because we know that dog walking can be a big issue. I mean, when I had my beagle, you know, we didn't have a clue of what to do with his strength, and when I was a child, I frankly was very afraid to take Barney for walks because I felt like I was out of control and he was pulling, and so you go into some wonderful examples of how to deal with that, and there's numerous ones. So again, I would recommend everyone look at those examples for dog walking. I want to talk about the automatic sit. We also have a photograph here. It's photograph number 9, I think, if I'm seeing this correctly. And I really liked the idea of, besides having, you know, your dog sit, you know, anytime you stop for safety's sakes, there's other great applications that you talk about, like, you know, keeping from jumping or you know, I guess going after dogs while on walks. What's the difference between this sit and a normal sit and an automatic sit? I mean, how would you go about getting that?
This goes to directly address the person who was talking about giving your dog too many treats. The automatic sit has to do with not giving your dog treats. You've done the behavior so many times, again, to help people out who are training their dogs. It takes 21 to 28 days for both humans and dogs to form a habit. And so once the habit is formed, you then start weaning your dog off of treats because the behavior becomes automatic. And if you teach a dog to sit, for example, when you come to a curb and you give them a treat and you say, very good, and then here's a little tip, you back up and do it again. and you come up to the curb, have your dog sit, give him a treat, and back up and do it again. Do it 3 to 5 times, and then say okay and step out into the street. Within 21 to 28 days, whenever you come up to the curb, the dog will automatically sit because they're going to anticipate that they're going to get a treat. Instead of giving them a treat, you say okay and cross the street. So in other words, you can teach boundary training. You can teach a dog not to go into the street because you've taught them to automatically put their behind on the floor whenever they come to the curb. Or if you want to keep them to from bolting out into the street, you teach them to sit whenever they come to the edge of your property. And so the value of teaching a habit or forming a habit with a dog is that you don't have to use treats anymore. The dog has done it so many times that there's this neural pathway that just teaches the dog or tells the dog, put your behind on the floor mm-hmm. whenever you come to the end of the property.
Mm-hmm. Now, the dog would be waiting for you to release it, or is it, okay, is the release just you starting to move, or what would be the release?
I always tell people, you know, and but you have a really good grasp of this, Susan, so that's great. I always tell people to use a visual cue or more, for most dogs, a vocal cue. They have to wait for some signal from you before they can step out into the curb. In our advanced class, what we do is we have dogs running next to us while we're in heel position, while the dog's in heel position, and we run out into the street, and the dog has to automatically stop at the curb even though we continue running. So that's a habit. That's a college level. The dog will not go into the street until they get some kind of cue from you, whether it be a hand signal or a vocal cue.
Okay, speaking of vocal cues, I've heard some talk that, well, and of course you write about that the words that we say, what the words are and how we say them have great power. And I actually, referring to cues, I read somewhere that don't use the word okay, because we commonly in our speech use that a lot. And so it can be confusing if we're using a word that we commonly use as we're just talking normally as one of those release cues. What's your opinion on that?
It's true. And I mean, you can say you're free. You can say find it. You can say okay in a different vocal inflection, and the dog can learn to discriminate with that. So any kind of release, that'll do, pig. You know, you can say anything that you want to release the dog as long as they wait for it. But yeah, words that are used less frequently have more power.
All right. Okay. And about words having power, what would you say is one of the most common mistakes that people make when they are, you know, giving these verbal commands to their dogs?
Number one, they say it before the dog knows it. We tell people, teach the dog the behavior before you label it. So teach the dog to put their behind on the floor before you start saying sit.
But how are you doing that?
You do it with a hand signal and a treat. So you can see in the book. So you just take a treat, put it over the dog's head. The dog looks up, the butt hits the floor, and you give him the treat. And so here's the rule. I mentioned there were 3 secrets in dog training. This is secret number 2.
Oh, good. I was going to ask you to get back to those.
There's a thing called latency. And this is what all professional dog trainers know is latency is the length of time it takes the dog to do something after they've been given the signal. So if you put your hand up over your dog's head and it takes 5 seconds for the dog to finally put their behind on the floor, that's called a 5-second latency. Sometimes I tell people to wait up to 45 seconds to give a dog a chance to process. Imagine somebody standing over your shoulder and going, "Hi, honey, did you figure it out yet? Hi, honey, did you figure it out yet? Hi,
mm-hmm.
honey." You'd want to strangle the person. So my dad used to do that all the time. He'd say, "Here, little Paul, try this." And I'd start to try it, and within 15 seconds, he says, "Oh, you're not getting it here. Just let me do it." So I didn't have a chance to process. I never had a chance to learn it. And this is what people do in our group classes, too. You know, I'll go over to a class and give the treat to the child and say, "Here, you try it." And then the father will start saying, "Here, now hold your hands this way. Now do this." I said, "Dad, be quiet. Let the kid figure it out." So let your dog figure it out and give your dog sometimes up to 45 seconds to figure it out. And when the dog will actually do the behavior within 3 seconds, so you practice and practice and practice, and finally the dog puts their behind on the floor within 3 seconds of your hand going over their head, that's when the dog knows it in that particular context or that particular situation. So that's how you know how to progress. So the first secret in dog training is contextual learning, as I mentioned earlier, teaching them in many different situations before they figure it out. And the second one is latency. Make sure you give your dog enough chance to figure something out before you start repeating the word. And that brings up the other thing about the problem of words having power. People going, sit, 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 sit.
Right.
So it's like telling your child to clean the room. how many times are you going to repeat it before the child does it? If you want your child to clean the room the first time that you say it, you say, this is what you're going to do, and here's the nonviolent consequence if you don't do it. And the dog figures it out very quickly.
Ah, when we come back after this break, I want to talk about your new book, Paul, Good Habits for Great Dogs, and some of the behavior problems that, you know, I have with dogs, and I know a lot of other owners have. Stay tuned.